I, well, they say it's like when the witch stole the dead to make them into her demons. I don't believe that's truly what's happened, of course, but it's strange, don't you think?
It's politics at best, mysticism at worst, the Mon Calamari insisted. No one's truly missing, mark my words. Those Jedi bones will turn up in some prince's ancestral shrine within a matter of months. Either way, he'll claim it signifies the will of the heavens and grants him divine right to inheritance.
Why can't it be the witch? The Ronin heard himself ask. He was stared at. He had earned this, and for the sake of their clandestine pursuit, he should have shied away. Yet he stared back, arms folded, waiting.
It can't be the witch because the witch is dead, said the Mon Calamari.
You're eager to believe she is, said the Ronin.
I hope you're joking.
The Mon Calamari gave him a disdainful look.
She preferred to think him mad than to entertain the possibility that he spoke any amount of truth. The Kaminoan likewise winced.
I'm half convinced this witch never lived. I hardly care either way. We give her far too much credit when we pretend to be frightened of her, when all she did was kill Jedi. Any worthy warrior could do the same. She, the Sith, they were nothing to the Empire. It endures now as it did before, impervious to petty conspiracy.
Anger stirred under the Ronin's sternum. He recognized it now when he might not have a week before. He had buried it so deep, and now he was all fissures through which it seeped, a dark, relentless fire. He needed to master himself, or he would do worse than upend cargo. He needed not to speak again. Yet he did. The Sith killed and died. You call that petty? What do you call yourself?
The Mon Calamari held her ground, nostrils flared. She thought his ego bruised. If only. We are artists, sir.
This came from a Pantoran woman dressed in rosy sunset hues that contrasted with her blue skin. She had been quiet thus far, but she spoke with demure confidence.
It isn't for us to determine the fate of Jedi or galaxy. We only mean to bear witness and to speak of it to those who come after. That is our role, to relay visions and instill them in the people. Is that not why you pursue the spirit of Sekara? What vision do you seek?
The Ronin didn't wish to answer. More pressingly, it occurred to him that he might not be able to. His throat had closed. The Pantoran woman lowered her gaze as if shy. She meant to deflect his anger. It still roiled within him, and he realized with dawning frustration that it needed some outlet lest he burst. Abruptly, the traveler slid between the Ronin and the woman, their tone conciliatory as they exclaimed,
Oh, no. No, no, no. Do excuse me, miss, but I fear we're all very much in danger of disrupting the master's process.
With that, they smoothly shepherded the lot away, singing apologies and looking over their shoulder, only to nod even more apologies in the Ronin's direction.
Please, if you have any questions, you must direct them to me. I can't guarantee an answer. Oh, no, miss, of course not. Although...
The Ronin heard little of what came after this. He had already turned on his heel. B5 churred in his wake and followed him out of the main lounge into a hall. The droid offered violence or other distractions if his master should be foolish enough to get him cornered again. This was a joke, probably. The Ronin wanted too much to take him up on it to answer. A vision, was it? If he was very lucky, he would never see such a thing again. He had left the relic on Dekien for that very reason. Akia found him first. She still had that platter of delicacies, and she joined him at the rail at the back of the barge, where they were somewhat shielded from view by the vessel's voluminous golden sail fins. The barge skated over the sea, the repulsor lifts making riotous white waves below. Akia offered him a bite, he declined. She tipped the whole thing over the edge. By reflex, he caught the platter, though the food was lost. Would have been more worth it to save the food, she said.
You threw it away.
I mean, all of it was the worst. Akia shrugged. You've seen the people who order this crap. You think they taste anything but credits? The Ronin didn't have much of an opinion on taste. Long ago, he had been considered a bit of a dullard on that count by his peers. He would have argued that he was the one who gave the Sith the ability to refashion their lightsabers, howsoever they pleased. And was that not a feat of aesthetic indulgence? They would have said it didn't count, because the most interesting thing he had done with his own lightsaber had been unconscionably pretentious. Years later, when he was alone, he had at last used his designs to make himself a proper auxiliary. He suspected his comrades would have found plenty to criticize in that, too. After all, he had built it first and foremost not as a declaration, but to serve a need. To this day, he couldn't say what had first damaged his now stolen blade. A fight? A curse? His own unsettled feeling and the ill will of the Force? Regardless, it had burned and burned, and he had, in the end, been less willing to douse the fire than to forge himself the scabbard, built of components scavenged from the blades of the recently dead. The scabbard had proved its use time and again. It had concealed what it needed to and enabled his cunning, but it had always been rather ugly.
I would argue that the one you built first indicates a sense of the theatric,
the voice said, which was not in fact a compliment, all things given. No point listening to those people anyway. Akia took the platter back from him and eyed the lounge suspiciously.
I mean, they care, some of them. But if that's how they talk about the dead, why do we want to hear them talk about anything else?
When he said nothing, she sighed and leaned on the railing.
I get it. You're sad or something. Who isn't? I just want to know what's up with those caverns. Is Sekara really blessed? And if it is, won't you, I don't know, burst into flames if you try to enter them?
That's not how any of this works, he said.
Oh, what do you know?
She said.
Is it haunted then? Or what, possessed?
Akia pressed on, dissatisfied with his vague shrug.
Oh, come on. You're a... whatever you are, the Force listens to you. Spirits, gods, aren't you lot supposed to be all in touch with that sort of thing?
Chia laughed as she joined them, hands tucked neatly at the small of her back.
They say the spirits were closer to all of us once.
Aren't you supposed to be working? The Ronin asked.
B5 prodded his knee. Behave.
Have you no insights to share?
Chia asked, head canted. The Ronin bent his head to acquiesce. She patted his elbow.
Now, I haven't met a spirit, much less a god, but I'm given to suspect that they were less than pleased when the Jedi turned from them in favor of the Empire. Although, I suppose you could say that most of us have forgotten how to treat them properly. They wouldn't mind talking, but we don't remember their language.
I pray, said Ikea somewhat belligerently.
I do as well, said the Ronin, which earned him Ikea's grudgingly approving side eye.
And I know about ghosts.
Akia plucked at the hem of her sleeves. Proper ones, I mean. Not whatever's going on with that lady who was chasing Grimm on Gembara.
A ghost, out of place. A ghost compelled, you might say,
said the traveler, unusually somber as they approached also, fortunately with no more wealthy visionaries in tow. The Ronin made room for them at the railing, and they nodded in a sort of thanks, though they kept their hands folded in their sleeves.
There's a reason they took to calling her Ilk Demon during the war.
You know a story? Prompted Chia.
The traveler was silent a moment, then a moment more, a singular contrast with the music spilling out from the main lounge behind them. The Ronin had until then been acutely aware of the Dekian system's sun. A fulsome diamond thing, it beat down on his nape from Dekian's cerulean sky and spiked back into his eyes through the barge's fluttering sails and again from Dekian's piercingly radiant waters. It was made all the worse by the absurd amount of black he had been stuffed into and the snarling mask that condensed and heated his every breath. Yet for a moment, he thought none of these things, waiting only for the traveler to speak. The voice was also silent, but he felt her curiosity, fixed and intent. She wanted to know what the traveler had to say, perhaps even more keenly than he did.
He had never known her to take such an interest in a person other than himself.
"We've all heard of these demons," said the traveler at last. "Leashed ghosts, wielded against their will. But there are other tales. Ghosts anchored by their own unmet wants, or ghosts summoned and kept by the needs of others. A knight who let his brother strike him down, who returned to guide the child who would at last bring his brother peace. An old master, passing to the demands of time in a fraught age, who remained to urge her pupils to restore tranquility."
They hesitated, head bowed. The corner of a sardonic smile peeked from below their mask.
"One wonders if we live in such a time, when ghosts might linger until they rise to shape the world, to become more than they were as the sediment of flesh. I might wish for it, myself."
The Ronin, bemused, realized that his heart yearned for something similar. He expected it was on account of how many ghosts he had made in his time, and that he would selfishly prefer they find something other to do than haunt him. Or perhaps it was that he felt himself as good as dead anyway, and that he would have liked a better explanation for why he stubbornly remained in the world.
"You're nothing like them," she hissed.
Her tone stung his ear, and he grimaced unconsciously.
"In any case," said the traveler, more buoyant and like themself than at any time since the crew had left the Crow,
"I suspect that whatever has been granting visions to Sekara's visitors has more to do with that spooky Sith relic you expect to find there than some great spirit of ages past."
"Lucky us," said Akia. "Luck? No. The Ronin doubted it had anything to do with that."
Chapter 13.
Dekian reeked. There was no better word for the stench of excess that drowned every street corner and stained the very atmosphere. Koru had not felt such an unwelcome slick on her skin in over a decade. Simultaneously, it relieved her to have her feet on solid ground. The white flare and black current of the Force pulsed through her in equal measure, flowing from every vital thing on the world and into her, through her. She was connected again, herself again, and grateful for it. The trouble was her quarry. With all swiftness, the old man and his crew had taken themselves from the Dazenma spaceport where their freighter landed to a harbor for local travel. There, they boarded a pleasure barge that departed from a gilt pagoda owned by Eternity Enterprises, a stylistic affair decorated with flares reminiscent of Dekien's unique flora. Fanciful illustrations of their destination were emblazoned on a board outside the departure hall, the Sekara Caverns. Kooru wouldn't have thought much of flying her stolen scout vessel straight to the caverns and ambushing the old man there, but she knew wealth when she saw it, and this cavern operation dripped with credits. The caves would be as jealously guarded as the Emperor's trove. It would do her no favors to be brazen on this leg of her hunt. Her options were thus: lie in wait, or pursue. Kooru knew which hangar the old man's freighter hid in, and she had no doubt she could get into it. Once inside, she would only have to bide her time until his return. But she remembered the moment she had nearly caught him on Genbara, before he leapt onto the freighter's ramp, and the precision of the black current strike that had thrown her back down into the dockyard. When the old man had fought her in the mountain village and shoved her back in that dingy square, it had been with a full explosion of white flare, a blast entirely unlike the current-driven arrow of black force power that had later felled her. To wit, he was not alone. And though Kooru knew herself strong, she also knew that the old man had killed her once, and that with an ally, he might kill her again and more easily. She therefore didn't like to think of cornering him in such an enclosed space as the poor crow, where she could so handily be flanked. Hence, a pursuit. To her advantage, if she caught him in these distant caves, far from the vessel he had flown in on, he would have nowhere to flee, that she could not run him down with her own legs. If she had her druthers, he would bleed out on Dekien, and then when she was once more compelled to go into space...
"Run. Don't be seen,"
Kuoru was momentarily unsettled by another sourceless murmur, but in the same moment, she melted into the boldly colored crowd milling down the street, unsure of why, but knowing she needed to. She soon realized, hoped, that it was the wise black current of the Force that had coaxed her into this narrow alley across from the tour company's departure hall. The crowd drew back with haste and delighted whispers as the Lord's retinue passed, the Lord's varnished palanquin hovering in their midst. Kuoru had seen more palanquins than she liked floating down Dekian's lanes, but this one announced itself like no other, not with grandeur, but with the character of its attendants. Jedi. Koru's gut flared at the sight of the brown Jedi cloaks and white robes. The lightsabers hung proudly at the sash of each one who had been granted the title of knight. She bared her teeth in shadow as the Lord exited his palanquin. His robe, his sash, his cloak. The expense of the fabric spoke to a man of his station, but he carried himself just like his retainers, and he wore a hilt at his waist, too. A Jedi and a Lord. She had heard some knights were elevated to the role in the wake of the Sith Rebellion. Kuoru held as little love for the Empire as she did for the Jedi clans, hungry hypocrites, the lot of them. She shouldn't have been caught off guard to see the two mingle so thoroughly within a single man. Perhaps she wasn't uneasy. Perhaps this was merely disgust. She watched with narrowed eyes as the Jedi Lord led his entourage into the Eternity Enterprises pagoda, the company's employees rushing to keep up with him.
Here, this is your chance.
Kuoru's lip curled in irritation as she glanced over her shoulder. She still couldn't say what at. It was no terrible bother to keep herself slight and unobtrusive in Jedi eyes. She had never found Jedi to be particularly observant in the ways that mattered. They cared most about those who held weapons and those who walked with intent to wield them. It had behooved Kuoru and her fellow apprentices, those who had been considered unreliable, many of whom had one day become Sith, to learn to make themselves seem small and vulnerable. Though it chafed Kuoru to adopt the pose, she had a graver need than dignity. Milling through the Eternity Pagoda with a gaggle of tourists, she overheard what she needed. Said an attendant,
"I'm afraid this month's barge to Saikara left just 2 hours ago, my lord."
Said the Lord, "It's no trouble. We'll take a faster vessel if you would just lend us one of your navigators."
Kuoru grimaced as she listened, scanning through the offerings projected at a kiosk. The Jedi Lord arranged his journey with a casual tone of a man who expected obedience on account of his warmth. Merely listening made her want to punch his ear. Even so, she wondered, just what did this Lord think to find in these caverns? She doubted it was the enlightenment the tour company advertised, not because she thought a Jedi above seeking truth with credits, but because she knew better than to trust coincidence. If this Jedi Lord was after her prey, she would have to beat him to it, or kill him should he get in the way.
Don't get distracted.
No, of course not, but out of the corner of her eye, Kuoru followed a pair of young Jedi. Not knights, they carried no lightsabers, but the lower caste of graduated apprentices that the clans called guardians. Those not deemed worthy of a blade, but trusted to run patrols for their masters as they walked through the crowd outside the departure hall. Simultaneously, she heard the Jedi Lord direct his retainers, determining who would ride with him on the commandeered vessel and who would take the smaller scouting skiffs ahead to observe and guard. There was no question where these young Jedi, these young, weak, foolish guardians, would be assigned. A shallow pang of recognition, akin to sympathy, tugged at Kuoru's chest. If she had been so unlucky as to be left with the Jedi, she might well have been left to this meager fate. She remembered well what it was to be used, to be molded, directed, made an extension of another's wants with no regard for her own. Something of the thought gave her pause. She half expected someone to speak. When no one did, she inhaled slowly to recognize the pain, then exhaled out the whole. Perhaps these guardians did not deserve to die, but every worthy fight came with sacrifice. Later, she stood over two young Jedi guardian bodies on the scout skiff, where she had hidden herself since their departure from Dazenma's harbor.
They had died swiftly, at least, and one of them had not even had the chance to be afraid before she cut them down. Now she had only to get the skiff up and running before the Jedi Lord's vessel caught up to her and sensed something amiss. She readied herself to tip the bodies into the sea.
No, they have a use yet. Didn't you?
Ah, there it was. Koru did not turn to the voice, but she recognized it, and with that recognition, she brought to bear her attention.
A use? She said.
Be clear or be silent. There was the hum of the skiff, the crush of the waves, the ringing in Koru's ears. Then,
well, Koru, this will go better if you let me take care of you.
Then, nothing. A silence so full that she could only call it a warning. It left Koru shivering under all the heat of sun and sea. Yet in the silence, there was freedom, and Koru was determined to savor it. She nevertheless pulled the bodies back into the shadow of the skiff interior, where they were sheltered from the sun. She told herself she chose to. It was better to believe it so.
Chapter 14.
That's a lot of Jedi. There's like a whole herd of them down there. Akia broke off and turned to Chia.
A pack? A gang?
A pride, Chia said sagely, glancing at the Traveler. The Traveler, however, sighed under their breath, then cursed with a word that made even the Ronin stare.
A headache,
they proposed.
We can't be seen.
The Jedi had arrived before the Eternity Enterprises barge. Special dispensation, a commandeered vessel, a mysterious certainty on the part of the Lord, and a strained air among his subordinates. Akia relayed this from staff gossip. She had mingled while the rest of the crew hung back in one of the barge's private suites. Now, her nose wrinkled at the Ronin. I guess Grimm's probably killed a bunch of their buddies, huh? Can't we just say he got cast for his looks?
Well,
said the Traveler,
perhaps we could, but when I said we can't be seen, I meant me too.
That earned them another look from the crew.
As if I'm not the most suspicious person you know, said the Traveler. But I am serious. This could go quite poorly.
Chia came away from the curved window through which she had been observing the situation on the dock. Her gaze held a mild scold that made the Traveler raise their hands in surrender. She touched their shoulder.
I assume you know this Lord. What would bring him here?
The Traveler pressed their hands together in front of their mouth in a gesture of deep thought.
Lord Hanrai has a curiosity. He could conceivably be after an encounter with whatever grants the visions of Sekata.
You think he believes in that? Akia asked.
I think he'd know better than to assume it's nothing.
The Traveler's fingertips had whitened with pressure.
This Hanrai concerned them.
We may be better off just assuming he's after this relic of yours, Master Ronin.
Either way, they couldn't wait. The Ronin laid a hand on B-556's head. The droid warbled confirmation. He had successfully acquired and modified a map of the Sekata Caverns from the Pleasure Barge's database, and he projected it into the center of the room for the crew to see. The fully colored version of the map for visitors had been reduced to blue lines, allowing them to better chart a course through the cavern's interior architecture. The narrow beach at which the pleasure barge was docked quickly gave way to a steep incline layered in thick tropical vegetation. Eternity Enterprises had cleared a winding path through the foliage to the mouth of the caverns, all of which could be seen from any point on the beach.
We have two immediate choices, the Ronin said. Through the front, or...
At his gesture, B-5 swiveled and panned the hollow to look down on the caves from overhead.
We enter from above.
It's a cave, Grimm, said Akia. You know, so-called because it's a dark place underground. Above is where the rock is, unless you're saying you want to blast a hole in the mountains.
The Ronin held up a hand.
There's already a hole.
From the entrance overlooking the beach, the Sekata cave system extended some 10 kilometers into the planet before it became largely untraversable to those without special equipment due to its intersection with an underground river. The Ronin indicated a point about 3 kilometers from the entrance where the cave temporarily widened into a tremendous basin, then traced his finger up from the basin to a gap in the mountains overhead. B5 highlighted the breach in the cave ceiling that had collapsed.
"We reach this point and go down," said the Ronin.
"Oh, sure," said Ikea. "Just sprint 3 clicks uphill through jungle and throw yourself down a lightless sinkhole and hope you outpace the Jedi below."
"Yes, you're right. We'll want to delay the Jedi as much as possible," said Chia, as Ikea threw her an incredulous look. Chia turned to the traveler. "I'll insert myself with the attendants seeing to the Lord's entourage. Keep an eye on their progress and ensure they're slowed to our liking."
"Auntie, what if one of them recognizes you?" Ikea protested. "If this Hanrai guy's so curious, he might know your face too." At this, the traveler's mouth nigh imperceptibly tightened. They seemed about to voice an objection when Chia clucked her tongue.
"The Jedi don't all hate me, you know," she scolded. "Some of them like that I've rid them of their rivals. If Hanrai takes issue, well, trouble is trouble. I'll manage. But at least you'll have forewarning."
She paused only to quirk a smile at the traveler.
"Ah, don't look so anxious. You think I've anything to fear from a Jedi with the arrogance to call himself Lord?"
The traveler's fingers grazed Chia's wrist.
"Don't underestimate him. He's a clever old man."
"And I'm a clever old woman. Now, be clever yourself, why don't you?"
Ikea groaned. "Guess I'll steal us a way out. Might as well have a way to bolt on the off chance we don't all die. You with me, B?"
B5 warbled agreement and let the hollow fade out, at which point the Ronin found himself facing the traveler.
"I'm with you, then. I dare say we have the easy part,"
they said, and though their tone was light, they said nothing else for a good long while. In their favor, the guests that disembarked from the pleasure barge thrilled at the sight of a Jedi Lord. It was no excessive trick for the Ronin and the Traveler to slip off the end of the barge to the dock and swiftly into the thick of the forested slope that bordered the entrance to the Saikara Caverns. Subtropical foliage bloomed lushly up from the black sand beach, dense with a dozen shades of green and leaves wider than the Ronin was tall. The path to the cave mouth had, to the Ronin's vague irritation, been lined with shrine gates, painted freshly red. The traveler clicked their tongue at his hesitation and hurried him forward into the shadows of the undergrowth. So long as they lingered at the coast, they risked being seen not only by Jedi, but by Eternity security droids. The Ronin had journeyed this way before, though the last time he had moved through the cavern, not over it. But he generally recalled the direction of the cavern collapse that had created the tremendous Dolin. From there, they would descend and go as fast as possible to the end of the cavern where the relic waited.
"Don't suppose you have any useful skills here?" the Ronin asked.
They had lowered themselves into the yellow-flowered brush as a many-legged drone cruised over the canopy.
"Say, camouflage?"
"I'm doing my best," said the traveler. "Let's just be subtle, yes?"
"That hardly sounds like a real answer," said the voice. The Ronin had to hide his relief. He had feared her angry on the barge with all that talk of ghosts and demons. That she was still with him, even as he made his way to the relic, gave him some unearned sense of security. By contrast, the traveler left the Ronin ill at ease. As they slipped together through undergrowth and between spindly trees with gossamer branches, the traveler said little, or they said nothing. It shouldn't have set his teeth on edge. Their sneaking was better served by silence, but he had realized 2 things. First, that this was the first time he had been truly alone with them, and that he was expected to rely on a person who had not seen fit to be honest about their skills. Second, that he had never imagined them capable of such quiet.
"If you want so terribly to talk, why not ask what they did to ensure the Jedi hate them as terribly as a Sith?"
The Ronin brushed a stinging insect from his face and glowered in the direction he felt her in. She was always most palpable at her most prickly.
Shouldn't you? Don't you have the right?
Again, two items. First, should he? Yes, in all likelihood. It would certainly benefit him to know just what manner of being he had agreed to partner with. But the right? Here, he couldn't agree. Perhaps his answer would have been different if the traveler had seen fit to ask him for stories of his rebellion days. They hadn't. Therefore, what could he ask them in turn? And yet...
And yet?
She murmured. And yet, they had found him. He, who had spent two decades roaming the fringe of civilization, losing himself to the seasons of distant worlds. He had been content to blame their meeting on his confrontation with the bandit in the fight where they had both made public fools of themselves as they sought to kill each other in the only way Sith could. Of course, those in the market for a Sith would swiftly make their way to such an ill-advised explosion. And yet, the traveler had found him so immediately. Not a day after he left the village, he had met a musician on the road, waiting. The traveler caught his gaze.
You're staring.
The Ronin frowned.
I'm concerned.
About me? Or perhaps for me?
The traveler touched their chest.
How sweet.
I know very little about you.
That's intentional.
What if I wanted to know more?
Then you should ask.
Their teasing tone suggested he was unlikely to be rewarded for his efforts. They were again forced to wait. A pair of drones had descended to scan the clearing ahead. The traveler touched his shoulder and pointed upward into a tangle of interwoven branches above, the abandoned nest of some massive flying creature. The bower proved large enough to hide them both. As they lingered, the Ronin took it upon himself to shed that infernal mask that had completed his costume. The humidity of the jungle had left him nearly choking on his own breath. He massaged the jaw as he did. The underlying scar ached with the extra weight he'd asked it to bear. The traveler relaxed against the woven wall of the bower, watching him. Wary or curious? The Ronin thumbed the edge of his prosthetic.
I'll tell you how I got it.
Do you expect I'll be impressed?
As a trade, he finished.
Eager, aren't you?
The traveler spread their hands.
What do you want that I haven't offered?
He nearly laughed, as if they'd offered anything.
I won't be choosy.
The traveler placed their chin in their palm and adopted the attitude of scholarly attention. As they did, the Ronin realized that he had just promised to explain himself. It would be difficult, as he was neither in the habit of telling his own stories, nor even of recollecting them. But the sight of the Jedi Lord on the beach had driven a spike into his heart, and those stories were bleeding to the surface of his mind, whether he tried to recall them or not. He remembered, with a keen and throbbing darkness that echoed with each pulse of ache in his jaw, the last time he had faced a lord. That lord had not been a Jedi, but he had been a master of them. Or he had been until he died.
A foolish moment, the Ronin said at last, quiet under the creak of the trees and the distant hum of the drones. I let a man strike me and didn't respond in kind.
The traveler seemed somehow to see past him, through him. Their focus peeled away the prosthetic to reveal the length of knotted skin and malformed jaw that was the left edge of the Ronin's face. They seemed even to see the blackened wound it had originally been, a scorch mark left by a blaster bolt barely dodged.
It must have been a terrible strike to leave a scar like that.
He was very afraid.
Is that why you spared him?
He was dead anyway.
And the Ronin had taken the man's blaster to ensure it wouldn't happen again. That weapon now hung at his waist beside his lightsaber, an ornamental piece of frippery modified to more practical use. The traveler sighed.
I have a feeling you've left out all the interesting bits.
To be fair, he had.
You're the storyteller. What am I missing?
Motive, for one.
Betrayal.
Your own?
He waved a hand in acquiescence.
Ah, see? Now you've told me his motive. A wounded heart. But what drove you to wound him? Why turn your back without defending yourself? It's an enticing little puzzle.
So I have won your interest.
The traveler tilted their head to acknowledge the loss. Then they raised it and stood.
Ha! I believe the way is clear. Let's be quick, lest we're caught again and compelled to share more dreadful secrets.
The Ronin had hoped to push, but indeed, the drones had left, and they weren't far from their goal. At the other edge of the clearing yawned a gully. Within it lay more forest, half a kilometer down.
Quite the cave you have here,
said the traveler at the edge.
It isn't mine.
The Ronin pointed to the far end of the Doline, which was now bordered with another of those red-painted shrine gates. Fanciful bridges and wooden walkways floated across the gully in a meandering fashion and extended through the gate into the caverns that loomed darkly beyond.
That way.
It does occur to me to wonder,
said the traveler, as they studied the Doline, determining how best to get down.
Is it possible that with all the fussing they've done with the local landscape, our acquaintances at Eternity might have already found this relic of yours?
The Ronin frowned.
If the visitors are still suffering visions...
Oh, you can come down with a vision for one of any number of reasons, and most of them have nothing to do with the Force. The power of suggestion, for example.
The Ronin frowned more deeply.
You speak as though you suspect it's gone.
The traveler straightened a bit, seeming taken aback by their own suggestion.
Well, maybe I'm looking for reasons not to throw myself down a very large hole in the middle of...
They caught themselves at the end. They and the Ronin both stilled as the sound of voices echoed down lengths of stone coming from below their feet, through the caves that led back toward the coast. More guests. Whether they were Jedi or not remained to be seen. It would be wiser to get so far ahead that they wouldn't be able to tell who was nipping at their heels. By unspoken agreement, the Ronin and Traveler both hopped over the edge of the hole, into the forest below, down and forward. Akia waited until the majority of the Jedi had followed after their lord into the caverns to begin vetting the skiffs in earnest. She had kept careful watch on all of them, with B-556's help, as those poor guardian grunts who constituted the lesser Jedi were assigned their shifts. The Lord's entourage had brought four skiffs, all of them armored affairs with actual cannons mounted on the front. Overkill, really. Any one of those Jedi could break a civilian's neck as soon as look at them, yet they swarmed around their Lord like he needed protection from a murder... gaggle? Of teething rancors. One of the skiffs remained oddly untouched. Akia thought it likely that she'd missed the scouts who originally got out of it, or that she'd been the victim of some casual Jedi mind nonsense. Either way, that lone skiff made the most appealing first target. So, once the rest of the pleasure barge's guests had swanned off into the caverns, she moseyed into the kitchen. She got another platter of food from the contact who'd sneaked her and Chie onto the staff roster and signaled B-5 to be at the ready. Only a few Jedi remained on the beach. Two on the deck of the vessel they'd commandeered, a sleek white thing sculpted to evoke a fisher bird, and another couple standing watch on the path that led up to the entrance to the cavern. Couldn't be too good at their jobs, though, seeing as they hadn't yet caught Fox or Grimm. Akia got to sashay down the dock to the abandoned skiff with nary a side glance from any of them. First, she knocked on the gleaming side panel of the skiff. Nothing. She knocked again and called out in her politest tone,
"Food?"
Nothing again. Well then. Akia tapped the comlink she shared with B-5, who proceeded to trundle down the pleasure barge's gangway bearing a platter with tea and tea set. She took the droid's tray once he caught up to her and proceeded to wait under the relentlessly sweaty heat of Dekien's meridian sun as B-5 sliced the door open. Nothing continued to happen as this occurred, set her teeth on edge. If no one was in the skiff, fine. That meant Akia really had missed them getting out. But if someone was, then they sure as hell knew she and B5 were trying to get in, and they were just waiting. The door slid open. The smell of death rolled out. Akia coughed and nearly dropped her platters. One moment, two choices. Yell for help because someone had definitely died in one of the Jedi skiffs, and possibly screw every chance her crew had of getting out of this alive, or deal with whatever the hell had died, been killed, on a Jedi scout skiff herself. Akia gritted her teeth. She tipped the food and tea set into the water, just as she had off the deck of the barge, and, armed with dual metal platters, readied herself to smack the hell out of whatever moved. Beside her, B5 churred. "Yeah," she muttered. "You give him whatever you've got, bud." They stepped in together. The skiff was darker than the outdoors because the lights weren't on, though the harsh sun still spilled in through the wide one-way windows. She saw the bodies first. They hadn't even been hidden. Two young folks, maybe her age if that, laid out on the ground, dressed like Jedi, glaze-eyed and slack-jawed in death. She saw their killer next. B5 snarled an electronic warning. Akia whipped around as the door slid shut to meet two fire and amber eyes in a grimacing face. The Sith demon's hands snapped toward her throat, and Akia swung the platters with all her might. Hanrai slowed his step and turned to glance back over his shoulder. All around, the Sekara cavern sang, the black current of the Force flowing in perfect harmony with a shimmering white flare. Through all that, he felt with acute certainty that something, somewhere, had knotted, condensed, and burst. And it had done so not ahead, but behind. His quarry lay before him. He knew this without doubt, as he felt that too. Hence his retainers, knights, and guardians, with whom he walked down the lattice of Eternity's bridges toward the end of the caverns. Yet something behind him also boiled, or had, as now it quieted.
"Something troubling you, my lord?"
asked the tidy older woman who'd claimed the role of attendant to his party.
"Not at all,
Chia," Hanrai said, and he once more turned forward. "Nothing you and I can't take care of on the way back."
Chapter 15.
No matter how far they flew from the Doline, the caverns never darkened. The light came first and foremost from the walkways, the wooden bridges and lantern paths Eternity Enterprises had installed for their guests. A pale gold line led them through colossal cathedrals of stone no sunlight had ever touched. It glimmered over the coursing underground river that cut down the center of the cavern, and it reached up the walls as far as it could go until the natural dark consumed the ceiling. Here and there, the ceiling also glittered. Colonies of bioluminescent bacteria made constellations and stalactites, or flowered in the crevices of the phytokarst left by generations of their lichenous predecessors. The Ronin remembered his first journey down this path more faintly than he liked. The memory was obscured both by the veil of time and by a second, less kindly curtain, that of the drunken state that had led him to this deep hole of the world in the first place. The traveler seized him by the elbow. The Ronin jerked back from where he had just meant to leap. The platform ahead floated on repulsor lifts over the river, and beneath it, a massive, scaly back rippled with dark spines breached the surface of the rapids in an ill-lit curve. The creature it belonged to was doubtless wider than the platform and longer than 10 of them strung together. After an eon of a minute, its barbed tail slithered back under the surface, and only then did the traveler release the Ronin's sleeve.
"You seem distracted," they said in the cheerful tone of a scold.
"I'm focused."
But he let them stick closer from then on. The traveler's instinct for the presence of life exceeded his own, and he would have been a fool to ignore it. The cavern sloped deeper and deeper into the planet's crust, and the farther they went, the faster the water ran. The texture of the air changed, condensing.
Some familiar yet unnameable desire coaxed the Ronin ever faster. A final shrine gate awaited them at the crest of a darkly yawning cavern over a titanic black lake. The wooden walkways extended out to the sides of the open space, lining the warp and weft of the walls. They led to a platform at the far side, which had space enough for guests to sit and meditate upon the magnitude of the wild splendor. Unlike much of the walkways, the platform was built into a stone ledge that jutted from the natural wall. At this juncture was a shrine, pleasingly austere, a waist-height carved stone pillar and a tiled roof to protect the home of the spirit within. The Ronin frowned as he approached the pillar.
"Desecrating shrines now, are we?" said the traveler. "I suppose I can't be shocked."
"No, this is new."
There had been no shrine gates the last time he came to the cavern, to say nothing of the shrine itself. It nevertheless struck him as appropriate. He had not been the first to follow a call into this dark heart of Dekian.
"All right then, what are we looking for?"
asked the traveler, though they were cut off when the Ronin seized their collar and leapt from the platform. He had caught at the edge of his attention an encroaching presence. It puzzled him slightly that the traveler had not, given their prior sensitivities, though perhaps that could be blamed on their usual feckless approach. No time for that now. They plunged into the penetrating cold of the watery abyss. Training and the black current of the force kept them from breaking any bones, but the full shock of the temperature shift made the Ronin shiver. Simultaneously, that odd yearning that had grown in him since they entered the cavern bloomed through his chest and limbs and drew him down, forward, and down. The currents below the lake proved hungry. Great shadows undulated just out of clear view. The Ronin pushed himself, tracing that old, increasingly visceral recollection. The traveler kept up with him, he thought, but the murk of the water made it difficult to keep track of them. So did the call in his head, his heart, his entirety, which wanted him to dive and dive to a crevice in the wall that lay directly below the platform above. The closer he swam, the more apparent it became that the crevice was smoothed, both by time and by sentient intent. He dived toward it and threw it into an entirely black passage. His lungs burned as he dragged himself forward, his limbs growing sluggish with their own weight. Still he pushed, called by that other need. He wanted dearly to answer. He remembered. Light reached for him from above, pallid in the gloom. He pursued it upward. His legs kicked, arms reached, and when he emerged again into the world above, he gasped with a chest that ached to have air in it again. For a long moment, he treaded there, body desperate to sink back into the water, but his eyes too entranced by what he saw to let it. The spell broke only when the traveler burst out of the water too, heaving and hacking. They dragged themselves bodily to the shore. The cave floor sloped gradually out of the pool they had emerged into, and after coughing up some gouts of water, fell back on their back to wheeze.
"You are a jackass,"
they declared when the Ronin joined them.
"And I do not like you anymore."
The Ronin was momentarily tempted to tip them back into the water. Then they removed their mask to better glare, and he balked. Their face wasn't especially visible now, without the industrial lights provided by the walkways, but they had entered a space not entirely without its own illumination. Stalks of some tall, bioluminescent grass blanketed the hill around which the dark pool ran. More of the constellation lichen bloomed over slender stone plinths lining the slope. And from somewhere, faint, fist-sized globules of gaseous light floated, never reaching far above the plinths before they winked out into the dark. So in a way, he could see the traveler more clearly than he ever had before. They were not human. He had suspected this. He had never seen them eat nor sleep, only drink an idle cup of tea now and again. Their eyes were as thoroughly white as their hair, and though the Ronin couldn't name their species, if the faint lines on their face indicated age in the way they did for humans, they were long past youth. Younger than Chia, almost certainly. Old enough to know they were. But there were no particular distinguishing marks upon that face. No telltale scars or otherwise remarkable features. Attractive, by the Ronin standards, but he was given to think such things about a variety of folk. More than anything, they looked tired. This he understood, and all too well. The traveler frowned, then sighed and held up the red-marked mask. No, they said. I'm afraid this isn't my face. Why the mask? Why not? The traveler sat up, the fox countenance cradled in their palms. I've been flippant, but I think you understand. If you didn't, you'd use your own name. The Ronin allowed them the grace of turning his back so they could wipe their face and fit the mask back onto it. When they stood, they rejoined him and took in the hill at his side as they retied their hair.
Quite the graveyard.
Yes. The wanting pull in the Ronin's chest had quieted until the traveler correctly named the grotto for what it was. A place for the dead and for the living to recognize them. Now the wanting called him forward again, and he stepped over the ancient soil up the hill. The plinths he passed flickered in his wake. The lichen had burrowed most deeply in the grooves of the old characters carved into them.
I suppose it makes sense,
the traveler mused as they followed behind him, those light globules tagging at their heels.
The Empire classified Dekian as an uncivilized world, wild, ripe for the taking. But you can't live in this galaxy long without realizing how ill-fitting such words are. Every day we walk over the monuments of what came before us. We see where people used to live and no longer do for one reason or another, because they left or were made to, or they died or we killed them.
They drew me here the first time, the dead, said the Ronin. I wanted silence. Something like it. Whatever I could get. As he spoke, the Ronin realized he wouldn't have admitted as much a day ago. Perhaps not even an hour or a minute. But now he had seen the traveler's face. And together, they had come to a haunted place he remembered through an unseemly haze. He couldn't put a simple name to it. Not grief, not rage, not despair. A hot and hateful desolation that had threatened to burn him to nothing, and that he had prayed the dark would extinguish. He had returned from these graves alive. Cursed, he thought, as cursed as this whole galaxy, which couldn't properly end a single thing. However dead the people who had left these graves, they had risen to call him. And in answering them, he had failed to die. No end, no reprieve, just life, persisting terribly.
This relic we're after, said the traveler. It's here because you left it.
Yes. It was what remained of a choice, one I wish to forget. The Ronin paused to turn and look at the traveler where they stood, inspecting a particularly well-preserved plinth. The mobile light seemed oddly attracted to them, bobbing by their ankles and past the folds of their sodden sleeves. The sight of it stirred something in the Ronin's chest. The ancient ghosts who loved this grotto had once called the Ronin to their home, but the lights had never attended to him so closely. The traveler smiled when they noticed his attention.
You are worried about me. Well, you don't know anything about me, really. You might as well be worried over nothing.
I am aware of what I don't know. Have I not been asking? That smile melted away. They stood stiffly now, a strange mirror to the plinth that so interested them. I've gone twice now, you know.
I'm trying,
the traveler said, riddled with more heat than it seemed either of them expected. They straightened and turned away, gazing down the hill toward the pool from which they had emerged.
Perhaps when the situation is somewhat less dire,
I understand it's not liable to grow much less so while we're hunting a Sith witch with the power to resurrect the dead, but that is to say, maybe when the Jedi aren't breathing right down our necks.
When we get back to the Crow, then, said the Ronin.
Right then?
Said the Traveler, who had some sort of constitutional objection to not being an equivocating cheat.
We don't know what's...
The Ronin's fixed stare stopped the words in their throat. I've followed you until now, he said. I've been patient. I believe you owe me this.
Fine!
The Traveler threw up their hands.
I owe you, oh magnanimous one. Now, where's this thing you left?
I can't believe this. I literally can't believe this.
Akia knew she was complaining. That didn't stop her.
What did I want to do this morning?
Oh, nothing fun. No. Gonna go make nice faces at rich jerks so we can go traipse around a spooky cave and get our grabby little hands on a haunted Sith relic. But no, it can't even be that simple. It has to get worse.
Yes, intoned her terrible new companion. Worse.
Akia scowled over her shoulder at the Sith woman, who raised an arch eyebrow. This accented her freshly blackened eye, which was the only thing Akia liked about her. Akia nevertheless got the message. The Sith never let her hand stray far from the hilt at her waist. She'd already proven herself willing to turn the awful thing on.
The worst.
Akia returned to the controls, keeping the scout skiff skimming over the trees that topped the length of the Saykara Caverns.
You know when I wanted to get kidnapped by a homicidal Sith lady to pilot her stolen ship laden down with two dead Jedi? I'll tell you when. Never!
You haven't been kidnapped, said the homicidal Sith lady.
We're collaborating.
Oh, sure, that's what I call it when someone menaces me with a laser sword.
You struck first.
And Akia had been an idiot to think two serving platters would take down the vengeful ghost of a Sith warrior. Or she'd known it wouldn't do her any good, but she'd figured it preferable to go down swinging. She could only call herself lucky that the Sith demon was so shy of Jedi attention, as shy of it as Akia. The Sith couldn't twist Akia up in the Force with so many Jedi on hand to sniff her out, and Akia couldn't scream for Jedi rescue if she wanted her crew to have a chance of escaping. Why the Sith hadn't just killed her like she'd killed the Jedi, that she didn't yet know. The demon had apparently driven herself out here. What did she want with a pilot? Either way, here they were, screeching through the sky together, hoping desperately that they'd get to the end of the cave before the Jedi squad got there first. And then what? What happens when we land? Akia eyed mutinously. When you don't need me anymore. Am I getting choked, bisected, or plain old stabbed?
I'll do nothing you don't make me, said the Sith, like a liar.
Akia's lip curled.
Sure.
The trick would be getting the drop on her again. It was possible. Akia had done it once, when she was years younger and more foolish, and desperate and had help. When it was her and the other conscripts huddled in that frigid cave, figuring out which of them would poison their Sith commander, and which of them would have blasters, and which of them would have knives. 10 tried it, 6 made it. This time it was just Akia and B-556.
I'm not going to kill you, the Sith said with an odd determination.
She sat cross-legged in the seat beside Akia's and looked for all the world like she believed herself. Or like she wanted to.
Right, said Akia.
And though she knew she shouldn't push, she asked, Why?
I've made my choice, the Sith ground out.
She knuckled her temple and sent Akia a narrowed amber glare.
I'm Koru.
Akia had no idea what to do with that, but as Koru was definitely having some manner of Sith demon crisis, and as Akia had glaringly few alternatives other than figuring out how to remain not killed by the aforementioned crisis-having Sith demon, she said,
Great.
And I'm Akia. Koru grunted. Then she pressed the full heel of her palm to her forehead, squinted, and indicated a point on the map projected on the navigation console.
Go there.
What's there?
Do you want to reach your friends or not? Koru snapped.
If it's Force stuff, you just have to say.
Akia muttered. Kaoru looked strangely offended at the prospect. Terrible. Kaoru was terrible. As terrible as every Sith before her and just about every Jedi Akia had ever met to boot. Not Fox, granted, but only because Akia was soft, chronically, irrevocably, and she liked that Fox was foremost gentle, and she liked that they cared, sincerely, about everybody they met, even the ones they only knew for a minute. She liked, a bit shamefully, that they didn't like the part of themselves that was some kind of Jedi. Despite herself, she liked Grimm too. Parts of him, anyway. The part that got confused when someone did him a basic favor. The part where he was gracious, and that he prayed. The part that Fox liked, and that B-556 apparently adored. She liked B-5 fine. A lot, even. The droid was earnest, and he apologized, and she'd never met a droid so willing to sit and teach her about what wild, clever thing he was doing when he did it. So if B-5 cared about Grimm, she did too. Which didn't make it easy to see the little astromech flickering in the far corner of the scout ship just on the other side of the two dead Jedi. His lights blinked off and on. He rocked. He stilled. He'd been trying to get in touch with Grimm since their skiff peeled out of the Saikata harbor. No word yet. Akia glanced at her own comlink. Still dark. No word from Chia, let alone Fox. Something didn't want their signals getting through. Maybe they could blame the caverns themselves. Perhaps short-sightedly, Akia wanted it to be so, because it was one thing if the riled ghosts of a creepy Sith-haunted cave wanted to keep them apart, and another thing entirely if the Jedi were running interference. So what if Akia didn't know how to kill a woman who'd already died? A Sith, she knew how to fight. A Jedi... She gripped the controls. If her luck turned, maybe she'd get to land on one.
Chapter 16.
At the top of the grotto hill stood a collection of cracked and eroded stones. They had once served as something like a shrine, or whatever the people who came before would have called it. On the Ronin's first visit, he had left the relic on a flat stretch of rock in the center of them. He crouched to better examine this section. It was empty.
"Well, what am I looking for?" asked the traveler over his shoulder.
"A shard of Kyber." The Ronin held up his fingers to indicate the approximate size. Quite small, about the dimensions of what one would fit into a lightsaber.
"It came from the Shinsui Temple Mirror on Reizu."
"Did it now?"
The traveler wanted either to laugh or to wail.
"That explains Seikara's reputation for visions, then."
The Ronin grunted agreement.
"It would, if it were here."
The traveler had let one of the gaseous lights play over their hand and rest in their palm. They froze as he said this.
"You think it isn't?"
The Ronin waved his hand over the empty stone before him. It seemed there was a disturbance in the lichen where he had originally placed the shard, but that was all the evidence it had ever been there. The traveler dropped their hand. The light that had hovered over their palm wavered and blinked out as they crouched beside him.
"Oh."
Their small dismay was worse than any curse. It left them both suspended in the dread of realization. Their prize was gone. Had it been taken? The Ronin laid his hand flat on the stone, searching for any sign of what could have done so. Some intelligence, something possessed of purpose and desire. Life saturated these caverns, the lichen in every crevice, the massive serpents in the lake. Death flourished too. The ghosts he had followed into this dark hole of the galaxy. They lingered. He felt them. His jaw clenched, a nerve in his teeth panging sharp and bright. Were those same ghosts his thieves? Had they only ever led him here to their forgotten rot to steal his shard for themselves?
"Careful,"
said the traveler. The Ronin looked over his shoulder. The stone shivered under his hand, then cracked.
"You, before we entered, You wondered if it might already be gone. What made you think it was?
The traveler held as still as the cave and as absence. They then settled their hand on his arm. Their fingers were chilled from the water, the hem of their sleeve soaked through. The Ronin was no warmer nor drier, yet through their cool touch he realized what a terrible fire he had become. He was all anger, fear, and worse. He shook. The traveler's tone was soft and sure. They meant to offer him an anchor.
I did wonder whether our entrepreneurial acquaintances at Eternity Enterprises might have stumbled across the relic. But that was before I knew about this peculiar little garden. I think we can say with certainty that they haven't the slightest idea this place exists. If they had, can you imagine what they would have done to it?
The Ronin bared his teeth for the punchline. It was the most he could offer in return. He had diminished, and he was grateful. It allowed him to confess,
I don't know what to do.
The traveler stood, and he saw that under their mask their mouth was tight with stress. Yet when they spoke, they were determined.
We find another way.
You are to leave,
the voice said.
The Ronin startled, and visibly, for the traveler frowned. He hadn't realized the voice had gone silent. It was as if her attention was divided, distracted by something other than him. That deepened the Ronin's concern, but not more so than her warning. She had spent all this time urging him forward. Now she wanted him to leave? Just what did she want from him? But he was not in the habit of discounting her warnings. They were few and far between, and though always selfishly motivated, she did not lie. Thus, he stood as well.
It won't do us favors to stay.
His new surety gave the traveler pause, but they agreed.
I think you're right, but I'm not going out the way we came in.
What makes you think we have an option?
We must. Obviously, we must.
Their sweeping gesture encompassed the entirety of the grotto graveyard.
Someone erected these graves. Someone tended them for a time. And you can't expect everyone to ritualistically hurl themselves into a watery abyss brimming with giant serpents just to pay their respects. Can you imagine a better way to prematurely bloat your graveyard's occupancy rate? No, there's another exit.
The Ronin conceded this, as well as their follow-up argument.
That breeze is coming from somewhere.
This search proved more fruitful and took far less time than he expected it to. It mortified him a little to realize it had been there all along. A narrow path carved into the rock face surrounding the grotto that wound around the circumference where it ended on a ledge over the pool they had surfaced in.
How did you get out the first time?
The traveler asked as they stepped onto the path, testing its solidity.
Don't tell me you swam against the current.
I was younger, said the Ronin. Hurry up.
The little gaseous lights trailed after the traveler for a time, even as they reached the section of the path that exceeded the height of the grave hill, as if reluctant to see them leave. The traveler hesitated for a moment. Did they mean to pray? But they pressed forward, and the Ronin thought himself grateful for that. The call of the dead that had lured him in grew fainter as he followed the traveler up the path. What ghosts remained were confident in their ability to endure, to summon him again whensoever they wished. He could run, but never far enough to escape them. The ledge overlooking the grotto opened up into a hewn tunnel that in turn led back to the lake cavern. The tunnel was broader than the underwater passage through which they had gained entrance to the graveyard, so they moved through it side by side until they reached the other end. Here, another ledge loomed some 20 meters above Eternity Enterprises' circle of golden bridges, themselves floating another 30-some meters over the grand black lake below. The path from their high shelf continued in the form of a carved stone bridge that arched improbably through the air from one side of the cavern to the other. They hadn't seen it when they first came upon the lake. The structure was somewhat concealed by the shadows cast by the natural undulations of the ceiling. It seemed to the Ronin that those who had hewn the bridge from the original rock had wanted it to feel separate. like a path from one world to the next. It did, most conveniently, feel separate enough that it did not at all occur to the cave's other visitors to look up. Eternity's guests had at last reached the Great Lake Chamber, accompanied by Jedi in their more dour colors. The guests milled along the circle of bridges, appreciating the lake or seeking a moment with the shrine. The hushed, delighted murmur of their awe traveled up to where the Ronin and the Traveler crouched at the end of the tunnel, eyeing the Jedi and weighing whether it was safe to step out onto the bridge. The Traveler nodded forward. The Ronin couldn't disagree. Careful, then. They walked one after the other, not for fear of the bridge's width, but to better avoid being seen by those gathered beneath. The Ronin took the lead. The shadows that hid the bridge also obscured what lay at its opposite end, and old habit wanted him to be first to meet whatever dangers might lurk ahead. As such, he was first to see what awaited them. Another ledge which led to a darkened chamber very slightly illuminated. Natural light crept down from an upward curving tunnel just beyond. The Ronin couldn't see as much of it as he wanted to, as a man stood in the way at the lip of the entrance to the chamber. A Jedi, certainly. The very lord the Jedi below had come to escort, in all likelihood, given the richness of his clothes. A lord who nevertheless held himself like a proper old knight. The lord, Hanrai, the Traveler had called him, was abruptly far more present as he stepped from the ledge onto the bridge, a steady beacon of white flare near perfectly buoyed on a steady churning pool of black current. Hanrai approached with a steady, unhurried pace. The Ronin's foot shifted back, his hand falling to the lightsaber hilt at his waist. His fingers twitched over the grip of his blaster next. Instinct wanted him ready to meet Hanrai's blade with his own, but he needed to weigh every option at his disposal. Not that he expected a bolt to get far past a Jedi Knight's blade work. As Hanrai neared, it became apparent that he was smiling. When he spoke, he did so with a warmth of familiarity.
There you are. I didn't expect you to take the hard way down, but I see you remembered the way out, eventually.
The Ronin racked his memory for the old Jedi's face. There had been a number of them when he was younger. Knights who saw a driven youth as one of their own, as a man who would one day succeed them if he could only bring himself to heal. No, he did not know this man. He understood this to be true, because it was the Traveler who inhaled behind him, soft and sharp.
Don't draw, they said, only for his ears. Hanrai, this isn't a fight we win.
The Ronin's gaze flicked to the cuff at his wrist, still dark. B-556 had sent no warning, neither had the voice outside her first. This moment was his own to escape, his and the Traveler's.
Do we have a choice?
He asked them, hand never straying from where it waited.
A choice? I think you made it a while ago, said Hanrai.
When he spoke next, it was louder, and this declaration echoed all through the lake cavern to the crowd below.
A duel, then. The straightforward affair. The victor leaves as he likes.
Don't,
the Traveler insisted. Hanrai countered their protest by igniting his lightsaber. It shone blue as water through glass, and as Hanrai lunged, it cut the air with the smooth certainty of a crashing wave. The Sith bandit had been all scathing intensity, untempered because she was untested. None had truly challenged her when she reigned as the greatest power on Little Genbara. Hanrai, on the other hand, was a hardened knight of the Empire.